When I first arrived here at King of Peace MCC, we had something that was called Dinners at 7. Some of you might remember that. Jerry Small was one of the people that would pull those together. And basically what it was, a restaurant would be chosen and arrangements would be made, and 30 or 40 or 50 people would show up for dinner. And you paid for your dinner and so forth. So when the first one of those came around, I thought, you know, this is something that I should go do. You know, feel a part of the community, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the name of it was Dinner at 7. Now, I come from Washington, D.C., spent many years there. And there was a culture in Washington that if you said something started at 7, if you got there at 7:15, 7:20, you know, didn't matter, it was okay. Yeah. So I arrived at the restaurant, which I had a little trouble finding because I was new, you know, I had a little trouble finding Tyrone Mall and Bonefish Grill, you know, I know where it is now, but, you know. So Barbara and I arrive, and we get out of our car, and we walk into the restaurant, and it is 7 o'clock, and I thought, man, I'm early. Everyone was seated. Everyone had already ordered something to drink, and I'm not sure, but they might have already ordered their meal at 7. So I learned something. There's a different culture here about meals, you know? Now, if we have a potluck that starts at 6:30, people start arriving at 5. It's just the way it is. So I've learned to adjust, you know, somewhat around all of that. Meals and food are incredibly important to us. Amen? We know if we announce something, a meeting or whatever, and say there's going to be food, we get more people to show up. Because we've said we're going to feed you something. You don't even know what it is. But you're happy. Because it's food. It might be donuts and coffee, but you don't care. You know? To tell you the truth, if it's just donuts and coffee, I'm fine. As long as there's a Boston cream in there somewhere. You know. Meals are really important social gatherings. They are today, and they were in Jesus' time as well. In fact, they held kind of a special importance in Jesus' time. People noticed who was invited. They noticed whether you washed before you ate. They noticed who had invited you. They noticed with whom you ate, who else was there. And they noticed where you sat. So in some ways, there were more rules and regulations back then. All I have to remember is to get there at 6:45, you know, and hope there's an empty seat someplace, you know, to sit. Now, years ago, we had a meeting of, I think it was large church pastors, and we were getting ready to have a meal together at a restaurant, and I think Reverend Elder Troy Perry was with us. And it was fun to watch the jockeying for position. You know? It really was an awful lot of fun. And I learned something new at that gathering. You know, because so when you have a long table like this, you know, I was always told the head of the table, you know, those are the important places. You know? I learned something else. The center of the table is also important. I had no clue. You know, that was important. You know, and so it was fun to kind of stand back and watch all these large church pastors position themselves around the table, you know, figuring out who was going to sit closer to Troy, you know, where was Troy going to sit, and can I sit close by, or, you know, some favorite person that you wanted to sit close to, or whatever, you know. People notice those things. Well, Jesus was invited to a meal at the home of a Pharisee. And it's very interesting in that first verse, it says, they watched Jesus closely. Now, there's another piece that's kind of in between that we didn't read because it's not part of the lectionary reading. The meal was on the Sabbath. And the part that's missing in the reading for today from Luke is that Jesus actually healed someone. Now, so already he was in trouble because he had healed someone on the Sabbath. No, and then we start with the verses that were read for you. They watched him very closely to see what he would do, to see what he might say. Where was he going to sit? With whom was he going to speak? What was this going to be all about? Because it was a Sabbath meal, it was especially an important meal. Well, you know, Jesus was, as one commentator put it, hardly a model guest. Yeah. Hardly a model guest. Number one, he healed somebody, you know, at a Sabbath meal. You know, you don't do that. You know, you save that for the non-Sabbath days, you know. And the man was not in danger of dying, you know. If it had been in danger of dying, yeah, it would have been okay. But no, he had just a disease. It says he had dropsy is what he had. So, you know, he already had gone beyond the social conventions. And the reality was he almost always, if you would mind the term, turned the tables on his hosts. He did that over and over and over again. They were watching closely to see if he was going to in some way go against the law, the Sabbath laws, etc., etc. And I thought about that. They were watching closely to see if they could catch him, trip him up, you know, see if he'd done something wrong. Maybe we should watch Jesus closely too, to see what it was he did, to see what it was he said, to see where he sat, to see what it was the people with whom he related most often. If we claim to be followers of Jesus, if we claim to be disciples of Jesus, that means we try to do what Jesus did. Amen? Well, that wasn't very loud. If we claim to be followers of Jesus, that means we try to do what Jesus did. Amen?
Amen.
There you go. There was a wonderful woman back in the 1800s, the early 1900s, named Hannah Whittall Smith. And she wrote a couple of commentaries of devotionals, I believe. And Martin E. Marty, who was an incredible church historian out of the University of Chicago, wrote about Hannah Smith. He wrote, "The ambition of most Christians is to have a vast number of things, and their energies are all wasted in the vain effort to get possessions of these things. Some strive to get possession of certain experiences. Some seek after ecstatic feelings. Some try to make themselves rich in theological views and dogmas. Some store up a long list of works done and results achieved. Some seek to possess a store of something or other which they fancy will serve to recommend them to God and make them worthy of God's love and care." See, there's the problem. We're already worthy of God's love and care. We're already both unworthy and worthy of God's grace. Unworthy because we could never do anything enough to get in God's good graces. Because God already sees us as loved, as beloved. So it's an interesting balance. We don't go around flagellating ourselves. We already have been blessed by God's grace and God's love. And there is not a thing you can do to make that better, because it's already plenty good enough. Plenty good enough. Ralph Waldo Emerson noted three qualities that he deemed marks of true success. Now, I don't, know that he claimed to be a Christian or not, but I think these are pretty good. The first was the ability to discern and appreciate beauty. I read somewhere that, we were driving back from Deltona yesterday evening, and there were several wrecks along the way because we were on I-4. It took us a little while to get back. And when those kinds of things happen, everybody slows down because they want to see the tragedy. But the wondrous thing, I think, was that we left really early in the morning. And we got to see a beautiful sunrise over Tampa Bay. It was beautiful. And because of those accidents, we got home late enough that there was an absolutely gorgeous sunset over the Gulf. Now, we could have concentrated on being upset about everything that had slowed us down. Instead, I'll never forget that sunrise and that sunset, marking the day that we had together. The ability to discern and appreciate beauty. The ability to see the best in other people. Ooh. Oh, now. Ralph Waldo Emerson's beginning to meddle. Do we usually see the best in others? Uh-uh. I think an awful lot of the time we look for the flaws. We look for the flaws. We don't look for the best and then build that up. Instead, we see the flaws and go, nye. That person's whatever. To see the best in others. And the last, a commitment to leaving the world a better place, either by doing one's own work better or by making it easier for others to do theirs. To make the world a little better. You see, Jesus was about turning the tables on what was important in life. Now, the Pharisees, the one who invited him to dinner, had a certain idea. I think a lot of times we do too. A certain idea of what's important in life. And we sort of try to tick those things off. What kind of bucket list do you have? Does it include a commitment to somehow leaving the world a better place after you're gone? Bishop Spong told a story one time about, I can't remember whether it was in Scotland or Ireland, I think it was Ireland, where he would go to visit for about a week or two every year, sort of on a retreat, and he and his wife would go walking along in the green and so forth in Ireland. And he told a story about this one woman that he met. She was a widow. And it was in a little town, and her little house was just sort of on the edge of town. But there was something different about that house. She painstakingly made the yard a place of beauty by planting flowers that would bloom at certain times, changing them out if she needed to. She spent a lot of time on that garden to make that little piece of land a beautiful place for people who would walk by or drive by. And she became known in her little town for this, and people would walk by just to see the beauty that she had helped put in that place. Now, that doesn't seem like a lot, does it? It doesn't sound like you're changing the world by planting some flowers. But somehow what she did impacted that town. Who who loved the changes of the colors and the flowers with the seasons. And when she got real old, and eventually she died. And the house, I don't know what happened to the house, but the townspeople then took up the task of keeping up those flowers. And different people from the town would take turns in making sure that that place was still a place of beauty for the people who would walk by. Now, she didn't change the world, but she certainly changed people's lives, didn't she? By that ability that she had to make something beautiful. And in making that place beautiful, it touched the lives of others who learned to look for beauty. The things that we do in life matter. They matter. When we're so often wanting to be seen for, you know, to get some accolade, and yes, we should say thank you often. And we should love and appreciate one another. But do we do things to gain some kind of status? You remember, again, in Luke, Jesus said, the first will be last, and the last will be first. Make me a servant. One commentator wrote, God doesn't look at the glitter of your guest list. My partner grew up Episcopalian, mostly, among other things, you know. And she jokes about, you know, the times when the Episcopalians were known as the frozen chosen. I'm not going to pick on the Episcopalians necessarily, but you know, there always, in some towns, seems to be a hierarchy of churches. Now I'm going to meddle. Jesus meddled, I'll meddle a little too. Now, there seemed to be sort of a hierarchy of churches. And, you know, when you reached a certain place in society, this is true. When you reached a certain place in the society of the town, there was a certain church that you would go to. Right? You know? If you hadn't kind of reached that status or whatever, there might be some other church that you would go to. And if you hadn't quite reached that status, there might be some other churches that you were free to attend. Pentecostal, Baptist, you know. The middle strata were the Methodists, you know. We were sort of in the middle strata. And, you know, churches shouldn't be like that. Churches should, you know, say, y'all come. And then when they all do, we need to be embracing. See, it really doesn't matter. Maybe it's time to learn some new table manners. In our own personal lives and in our church life. You know, we joke about when we say, y'all come, they all do. And in my experience about MCC, I think it's very interesting because I think it's a way our community kind of has grown up. You know, many of us are bruised and battered and broken from our childhood religions, right? You know, it takes a long time sometimes to get back to church. And you know, we're not so sure about this thing called MCC. And I've discovered as I've gone to seminars and read books about church size theory and all this kind of stuff, you know, they have this listing of, you know, this size church needs this many pastors and this size church needs this many pastors. And, you know, I've discovered through the years that with MCC, you have to have more pastors for fewer people. You just do, you know, because of the stuff we bring. You know? Because we want to say, y'all come. And when y'all do, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Jesus was about turning the tables. He was about saying, the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. The Pharisees watched closely. Other people are watching us closely. in terms of how we relate to one another, who we embrace and who we don't, who we include and who we don't, who's on our guest list and who isn't. Others are watching closely to see just who is King of Peace, MCC. And included in those watching is Jesus. Will you pray with me? God, we give you thanks because we have touched the outpouring of your grace and love. And sometimes we haven't just touched it. We have felt as if we're standing in a waterfall of it. And we're so blessed and so grateful. Help us to look to Jesus so that we model our own lives and our church life on him. So that the things that we say to one another, the things that we do for and with one another, model Jesus. Sometimes, God, we know that means that we're going to have some behavioral modification. But we know that you do that in us in love. Always with love. For seeing the very best in who we are. For seeing the beauty of who we are. And helping us to live that out in the world so that our lives make a difference, no matter how small we might think it to be or how grand our illusions might be. You keep us humble. You keep it real. So remind us in our prayers to be open to your voice, speaking to us, and help us to watch Jesus more closely and to imitate him more completely each day. We ask these things in his name. Amen and amen.